Thank you, Alex. Thank you, organizers, for inviting me. It's a great pleasure to be here. Now at last I know how my talk is called. But the title is self-explanatory, and I only want to say that I will speak not in such a general context of non-smooth domains. There are quite different areas in this field. Piecewise smooth boundaries, Lipschitz boundaries, but I will and other boundaries, of course, I will speak about general domains. The domains without any a priori restrictions on the smoothness. The absence of any requirements, of course, leads to difficulties, and most of the modern methods do not work. And we know not so much about behavior of solutions if the domains are not polyhedral or non-Lipschitz. I differ these two classes because they overlap, but one of them is not inside of the other. This is a joint work with my postdoc, Svetlana Mayborda, and this is not what she spoke about in Mexico, in, where was that conference, where, in Yucatan, yeah. Okay, it's something new and unpublished yet. Okay, so we go forward. What's the matter? Okay, so I'll start with quite standard things, just introducing the boundary value problem. Let omega be an arbitrary bounded domain in Rn, and f is an excellent function. We say that u is a variational solution of the Dirichlet problem if I'm speaking here about polyharmonic operator minus delta to the power mu equals f. So the right hand side is okay. The solution is understood in the usual variational sense, so this solution is unique and it exists always, even for right-hand sides in a much more general class. By the way, W M2 with 0 above, this is just the completion of C0 infinity of omega with respect to the usual Sobolev norm here. So we know only a priori that the solution has a finite energy integral. And the question is quite natural, is how smooth is this solution? Of course, inside of the domain there is no problem. Everything is known, the solution is infinitely differentiable. But when we approach the boundary, so it's just general knowledge that you are sometimes in trouble. And I will just touch upon some questions, some very simply formulated questions concerning the smoothness of the solution. Now, question one. As I mentioned already, the domain is unrestricted. Our boundary data include derivatives of the order up to m minus 1, right? Just for the Laplacian, it's 0, u simply. But for high order operators, you have the derivatives of the order m minus 1. Nabla m minus 1 is just the gradient of order m minus 1, the vector of all derivatives of order m minus 1. So I'm asking, for example, such a thing. Will this gradient of order m minus 1 bounded in omega. And it's quite easily seen that the answer is no. If the dimension is greater or equal 4. This is a triviality, in fact, but the example is so simple that you can easily see it here, and it is like this. So let's consider the punctured unit ball, this picture. The domain is the ball without the center. And we are in the four-dimensional Euclidean space. Eta is the usual cutoff function. So eta is in C0 infinity of, say, ball of radius 1/2, and it is equal to 1 on a smaller ball. Okay? So such a standard cutoff function. Now we multiply this function just to localize something with singularity. And this sum, in fact, is the solution, because it's a fundamental solution and you differentiate it m minus 3 times. So this is a solution. One can easily see that this solution belongs to Wm2 0 of omega, just differentiating m times and looking at the singularity here. You will see that it is square integrable. Okay. However, the gradient of order m minus 1 has singularity, logarithmic singularity at the center. You see? If you differentiate here m minus 3 plus m minus 1, it will be 2m minus 4. And when you just differentiate here, you will obtain simply log. And not log, but log differentiated m times, you will have 1 over modulus, not m times, m minus 1 times. Anyway, you see trivially here that it is in not in L infinity. Logarithm is not bounded as far as I understand, right? So you cannot, how to say, it's not interesting to consider higher dimensions. But we can ask the same questions for smaller n. Just a second. So as we know that for n greater or equal 4, the answer is no. Now n is equal to 2 and 3. And this is the theorem. Let omega be an arbitrary domain in R3 or R2, and U is a solution of the Dirichlet problem, as I stated, for the polyharmonic equation. Then for an arbitrary domain, this vector is bounded. So this is a general fact, independent on any smoothness of the boundary. Of course, for the Laplace operator, there is no problem here. You have maximum principle. But, and in principle, we have also for Lipschitz domain, this is a celebrated result by Vercotte and Pfeiffer, that you have a maximum principle of Miranda-Agman for Lipschitz domains. So you have estimate of this gradient inside of the domain by the maximum modulus of the same gradient on the boundary. We don't have this result here. And this is an interesting question, but it seems to be much more difficult. Anyway, we can say only this, that the gradient is simply bounded. Now this fact, in fact, it's better to say not this fact, but the proof of this fact, leads to some pointwise estimates for the green kernel of the Dirichlet problem in the three-dimensional domain. By the way, two-dimensional case is not interesting. It can be obtained by reduction of dimension quite easily. But so I'm speaking mostly about R3, about three-dimensional domain. So there is such an estimate. You see here, differentiation with respect to x and with respect to y, g of xy, it is not the fundamental, simplest fundamental solution. This is a Dirichlet, this is a green function of the Dirichlet problem with boundary condition. And gamma is the fundamental solution in the whole space. So it is written here. This is the fundamental solution. So we can estimate this difference, and there is an estimate here. You see, there is no singularity in the right-hand side, because you have maximum here. D of x and d of y are distances from x and y to the boundary. So you have here the maximum of these three numbers. But if the distance between the points is larger than the distance of each of them to the boundary, then you have either d of x or d of y. No, you have just this x minus y, modulus x minus y. But this is not a singularity. You should not think that this is a singularity. Singularity is hidden here, and it is killed. Another estimate of the same kind, which follows from this, is just this estimate with an absolute constant. See, it's an absolute constant. It depends, I don't remember what it is, but it depends only on M, on the order of the operator. Of course, this estimate leads to some simple results about the solutions. Let me show you some of them. This theorem. Let us consider a slightly modified problem, Dirichlet problem, but the right-hand side is written also in the variational form. It is written as a divergence of order m minus 1 of some vector, f alpha. So this is done just to include distributional right-hand sides. And then by using just representation of the solution by the green function and the previous estimates, we have such a simple estimate with an absolute constant C, independent on the domain. You see here we estimate gradient m minus 1 u of x inside of omega by the Newtonian potential. Okay, F here, this is the vector F alpha. So this is the vector. You have the sum of this F alpha. Not there are no different derivatives of F, just this function F alpha. So it's like, okay, anyway, this is clear. And of course, by using Hölder inequality, we immediately obtain such a such an estimate, which is sharp, of course, and now the constant C depends on, say, measure of omega only, on the volume. Okay, now we understand what happens with boundedness of these derivatives. But there is a question of continuity of these derivatives. By the way, if we are dealing with delta squared, with the biharmonic operator, we are speaking about simply about continuity of the gradient. Okay? But I'll speak about higher order equations, about this equation, minus delta to the power m. If we are dealing with this counterexample, quite similar counterexample to the one I dealt with at the beginning. Again, the cutoff function, and again, the punctured ball, and here derivatives of some order of the fundamental solution. If you look at this equation, at this solution, you see that its derivatives of order m minus 1 behave like x over modulus x. Homogeneous of order 0. I hope it is seen, even I can see this even sitting here. You know, but all right, I hope it is seen. Well, so of course this function is bounded, but it is not continuous. So you cannot say that for each domain the gradient of order m minus 1 is continuous up to the boundary. We need something to require. And this is my next goal. So we are dealing again with this original problem, minus delta to the power mu equals f. F is an excellent function. The solution is just usual variational solution. And we are trying to solve the second question. What are conditions on omega ensuring the continuity of the gradient of order m minus 1 at a boundary point? I'll give you some consequence of our result. When I go further, some, you know, frightening things will appear. They are called capacities. Many people hate this object because it is difficult to compute it. But this result sounds very, very simple. Simply, and the how to say? So when I come to capacities, you just remember that this is a consequence of what will follow. Let us consider a domain with, how to say, Dini boundary. Omega is the continuity modulus of the function which prescribes the boundary in some coordinate, local coordinate system. I'm dealing with the situation m greater or equal to, starting with biharmonic operator. Now, the result is like this. Suppose that continuity modulus is subject to this condition. Integral from 0 to 1, t dt over omega squared of t is divergent. Then every solution to the polyharmonic equation satisfies this property, continuity of the gradient of order m minus 1. So it's something like square root of t and some logarithms, times some logarithms. What is interesting that conversely, for every omega, subject to usual monotonicity assumptions, and such that this integral is convergent, there exists a C0 omega domain and a solution of this problem such that the gradient of order m minus 1 is not continuous. So this condition is sharp. I don't say that it is necessary, because more or less necessary condition will follow. But at least it is easily formulated. And you see, for example, that for any Hölder, just not Dini, but Hölder, less than 1/2, no, greater than 1/2, so better than 1/2, there is a continuity of gradient of order m minus 1. This fact was unknown, I think. Now, I'm trying to go somewhat deeper, to find more or less necessary and sufficient condition for continuity. And this is, of course, not the first result of such a kind. First of all, this is a just classical history that Wiener, Norbert Wiener, solved this problem for the Laplace operator in 1924. It was a very important event in his life, as he describes in his book, I Am a Mathematician. It's an interesting story, but I shall not tell you because this is not my story. Well, so now I just go down to the second order. Minus delta U equals F and in omega. And F is again in C0 infinity. The solution is just has a finite Dirichlet integral. We say, let us say that the point O at the boundary is regular if our variational solution tends to zero as x tends to the origin, to the point O at the boundary. So it's the usual continuity at the point. By the way, Wiener used a different definition. In the same spirit, of course, but he dealt with non-homogeneous boundary conditions. But this is absolutely equivalent. It is easily shown that one definition implies the other. So this is the regularity in the Wiener sense. And Wiener showed that the point O is regular if and only if this integral is divergent. Here, more or less, everything is clear. B sub sigma is the ball of radius sigma centered at O. So we have a portion of the complement to omega in the ball. Okay? We take capacity, Wiener capacity, harmonic capacity, electrostatic capacity, there are different terms, which is in principle a physical capacity, and Wiener was led by physical intuition to obtain this result, by the way, he writes about this. So capacity, one of many definitions of capacity, not like what Sasha Wolberg showed us recently, but yesterday, in fact, but an equivalent one. So capacity is the infimum of the Dirichlet integral. This infimum is extended over all smooth functions with compact support, which are greater than 1 on k. You see, imagine for the moment that it's instead of Nabla, you just have nothing, just u. Integral u squared dx. What is this capacity? Of course, you see that this is a Lebesgue measure. But when you deal with solutions of boundary value problems, when you have additional smoothness, you need a more subtle characterization of sets. And the Lebesgue measure is not sufficient. We know that L2 functions are defined modulo the sets of zero Lebesgue measure. But when we are dealing with Sobolev space, for example, Sobolev space of functions with square integrable gradient, then these functions admit a finer definition. And the exceptional sets are exactly sets of zero capacity. This shows that this terrible object is in fact necessary in this theory, if you really want to go to the depth. There are many, many examples which show that. In fact, maybe it is a little bit too late to, how to say, to advertise this notion, because, you know, when I started, it terrified everybody. Nobody understood that this is something of importance, that it is adequate language. Nowadays, This is already not the case. And, so, but probably I wanted to amuse you only. Anyway, this is the classical Wiener result. It had a lot of applications to Brownian motions, in probability, in potential theory, of course, in complex variables, anywhere. You know, just the first final result in the theory of partial differential equations. Necessary and sufficient condition. Now, this Wiener test was extended to higher order. No, okay. It was extended, first of all, for the second order iterators with bad coefficients, divergence from, non-divergence from, degenerating. In particular, here, Jerison and Koenig wrote a brilliant paper about coefficients in Mackenhaupt class. And so this is history in itself. But I will not speak about this because I'm interested in the higher order equations. And a few years ago, I dealt with minus delta to the power m, and I introduced the notion of the regularity in the same spirit as I did before. I called the point O regular with respect to the polyharmonic operator. Simply so, if u of x tends to 0, as x tends to 0 for any right-hand side, then the I call this function regular, exactly as I did before. Now, the result was like this. If we have a biharmonic operator, and the dimension is 4, 5, 6, 7, for dimensions less than 4, it is not interesting. You have always continuity of solution by Sobolev embedding theorem. So there is no problem. What is the problem is here. Infinite problem. And for m is greater or equal 3, we have only 3 interesting dimensions, to m plus 1, to m plus 2. Now I prove that the point O is regular with respect to polyharmonic if and only if this integral is infinity. Here, it's similar to Wiener in formulation. This is a necessary and sufficient condition. The difference is that the capacity is just m harmonic capacity. So you have here nabla to the power m. This is the Ries capacity of order 2m. Not exactly, but it is equivalent. Okay? No, even with u greater than 1 here, it is even not equivalent. It coincides modulo some coefficient. Okay? But in principle, if I require u equals 1, then it is not trivial to show that this is an equivalent set function. The equilibrium potential is generated not by the measure, but the distribution. Nevertheless, this capacity with u equals 1 and u greater than 1, these capacities are equivalent. Well, but together with Svetlana, we were interested. Oh, I did something wrong. Just a second. Yes. I don't understand. I go in opposite direction. No, I'm sorry. This does not work. I'm sorry, just a second. Okay, so it seems to be what I really need. Okay. Sorry, but anyway, you had a rest. Now I'm not interested in the continuity of the solution itself. This is for the first time that we are interested in the continuity of derivatives, even for the biharmonic equation. Previously I had the final result for some dimensions for u tends to zero. Now I'm interested in the all Dirichlet data, not only u, but also normal derivative, so to say. Okay? And I need some new notion of capacity first in order to formulate our main result. It's a kind of polynomial capacity. We denote by YLK spherical harmonics of degree L, and let P denote the span of these functions. Okay, so it's P of X is a linear combination of these spherical harmonics, equipped with just one of possible norms is just square root of the sum of squares of the coefficients. Then for any compactum K in R3 minus O, and any P here, we defined the polyharmonic capacity of K by this equality. It's exactly as I did before. Infimum of the gradient, by the way, square is missing here. It's just misprint. Where the infimum is taken overall, U in the Sobolev space, zero at the origin and at infinity. You should remember that the order of the operator is large, therefore even the value of the function at the point is important here. So I need to exclude the center here. But what is really important is that U equals P in a neighborhood of K, instead of U equals 1, as we have in the usual case of the capacity. We have U equals this homogeneous polynomial, harmonic polynomial. Okay, so now we have a capacity, and I'm ready to formulate our result. Now, first of all, we are dealing with this problem, which appeared already several times, and we say that O is M minus 1 regular with respect to the polyharmonic operator. If gradient of order M minus 1 U of x tends to 0 is x tends to 0. So continuity of derivatives of order m minus 1. Now, suppose that this integral is divergent. I will explain what this integral means, but if you have infinity on the right-hand side, then you have m minus 1 regularity. Almost converse. If we have m minus 1 regularity, then we have infimum of this integral divergent. Now, let us discuss what we have here on the left-hand side. So, we have the same capacity, polynomial capacity, of the set Cs minus omega. What it means? We have a spherical layer between balls of radius S and 2S. So Cs is the spherical layer. And I take a part of the domain of the complement which is placed in this spherical layer. I take capacity, polynomial capacity, and integrate with respect to the radius. One is not important, of course. Zero is important. Okay, I can put here anything. And this integral is convergent. But look, here I minimize this capacity with respect to all polynomials. So this is an absolute capacity, so to say. But unfortunately, This condition proves to be not necessary. We have a counterexample showing that this is not necessary. But the necessary condition is obtained when infimum stands outside of the integral. So we first integrate fixing P and then only minimize the integral. And this should be infinity. This is, of course, some gap, but we don't know what to do. However, this gap for particular cases gives the complete characterization. For example, this one. Assume for the moment that we are we have the main the exterior of this cusp. Okay? So H of R is this angle. You take the radius R and the angle between the OX3 vertical axis and the point on the boundary at the distance R from the origin is called H of R. So this is the angle. So the figure explains everything. And we require that this function H satisfies some, you know, more or less usual conditions. It's non-decreasing, and H of 2R is equivalent to H of R, the so-called delta condition, delta 2 condition for those who know Orlich spaces. So what is important is here. O is M minus 1 regular if and only if this integral is divergent. By the way, in the case of the Wiener condition for minus delta, you have a quite different characterization for this example. This is something like Lebesgue cusp's exponential cusp. But here it's much better. You have 1 over square of log, something like this. And this is necessary and sufficient for this domain. Now, there are some effects here, which shows that some algebra is also behind of all of this. The properties of the properties of the symbol, of the principal symbol of the operator. Of course, we are dealing with a special operator, so it is hidden here. Some general reason for this is not clear. Not only because we have not done it, but also because we don't know how to do it. Now, look at such a domain. The domain is the exterior of this spiral. This spiral is situated on the circular cone. This is very important. And we can say this is a smooth curve, more or less arbitrary. So we know that this point is not one regular here. But if we place this curve not on the circular cone, but on some other cone, it can be regular. It depends upon the curve. Another effect is instability of irregularity for delta squared under a fine transformation of the domain. We have the same equation, but we change the domain a little bit by an affine transformation, and a regular point becomes regular point. This follows from this necessary and sufficient conditions. Almost necessary and sufficient conditions. I shall not dwell upon this, but in fact the boundary here consists of this, you know, how it is called, quadruples of points. 1, 2, 3, 4. This, the fourth point, it lies outside of this circular cone. And if it is we have this sufficient condition. If the angles, directions of those points which lie outside this point, which lie outside of the cone, are subject to this condition, where the sum beta k minus alpha squared is infinity, then the point is one regular. In particular, assume for the moment that these points are situated on some ray which lies outside. So they are at some distance, angle distance from our circular cone. Then the point is regular. But if you place this point, this fourth point, to the cone, you lose regularity immediately. Now there are some, I'm close to the end, there are some results of similar nature for convex domains. And the question is, of course, we are used to the fact that if the domain is convex, then the solution is better. By the way, this is not always so for general operators. There are convex domains for which, for example, solution is not of fourth order operator, but the solution is not C1, for example. But I shall not dwell upon this. This is a different story. But now the question is like this: are second derivatives bounded or not? And 4 years ago, together with Vladimir Kozlov, we showed that for two-dimensional case this is so. For the biharmonic operator. But now we can answer in affirmative for all dimensions. And this is the result. So any convex domain, and here is a solution, and then the second derivatives are bounded. Now, am I allowed a couple of minutes? Who is the boss here? Yes? Okay, just let me show. Since any talk should contain some proofs, of course I cannot give even a single proof, but I will say that in principle everything depends upon some identities, integral identities. And in the case of the arbitrary domain, one of these identities is here. And you see, the main new thing here is this function g. Everything is based upon the choice of this function g. This is the fundamental solution of this fourth order ordinary differential equation, which is written explicitly. So choosing g like this, you obtain this almost pointwise estimate of the function. V is a function u in under this change of variables. So I don't want to go into detail. For the convex domain, these identities are more complicated. I shall not dwell upon this. Thank you very much.
No.
For this problem, m minus one regularity, we know nothing. In principle, this is so new, it is so fresh, that I cannot think about extension of this just at the moment. It is too early to think about it. But concerning usual regularity, when you are speaking only about continuity of the solution, then my paper in Duke contains more general things. In particular, identities which contain the fundamental solution of this differential operator. This can be an arbitrary elliptic operator. an arbitrary, strongly elliptic operator with real coefficients. By the way, you know, for maybe it is not known generally, but there are striking counterexamples showing that for higher dimensions, the situation with higher order equations is quite different from that of second order. For example, this is an example which was obtained, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago by myself and Sergei Nazarov. So this is the fourth derivative in the direction x8. And here you have 10. It can be something else, of course, but not very small. And here, usual delta squared. This operator is better than the biharmonic, in a sense. The positive, it's more positive, so to say. Nevertheless, the solution in W22, 0, can be unbounded here for some, for the exterior of some cone. So even the conic point can be irregular in the Wiener, so to say, same sense, for this operator, but not for delta squared. No, for delta squared, yes, for delta squared it's okay, it is regular. So this effect appears only because of this 10 derivatives in the direction x8. There are no such counterexamples for direction less than 7. For the 7, we can construct such an example also. It's not published, but it can be done with some counterexample of Brian Davis, by the way. Okay, but this is the answer. For higher dimensions? They will not be polynomials, I'll tell you. Probably, no, but I don't say that, you know, derivatives appear only here, and I cannot say anything about different operators. When I speak about continuity of the solution, then the weight is simply fundamental solution in the whole space of the operator, in the whole space. So you cannot write it in a very simple form. It has a form. Oh, I can use it. Something like this. For example, for higher dimensions. So this is the weight in the Gordian inequality. You have ellipticity with this weight. And first of all, as a necessary condition, you need positivity of this function psi. This seems to be obvious, that the fundamental solution of the elliptic equation delta function here, with constant coefficients and homogeneous, that its fundamental solution is positive. Why? Because it is a kernel of positive operator by ellipticity. But it is not positive point-wise, not necessarily. It is not polyharmonic, 1 over modulus x to some power. This function psi can change sign. And this is the reason for examples like there. So we could not construct this counterexample without having elliptic operator with fundamental solution of variable sign. Okay, so like this. Any other questions? Thank you.